September 21st, 2020 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for calling in this morning. In the spirit of social distancing due to the COVID-19 virus, today's meeting will be conducted by telephone. Members of the public that may be on the phone are encouraged to make comment and ask questions, but that would be during our business session later today. If you do wish to speak, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. I will open the phone lines up later for such comments. This morning's meeting is a study session, while our business session typically starts at 1 o'clock. But due to the light morning agenda, we may well be getting to the business session before lunch today. Today we have all five commissioners on the phone, General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Garfin, Clerk of the Board, are all in the boardroom. So if you would please, at this time, welcome Allison Brodeen. Allison, are you with us this morning?
I am.
Allison, would you be kind enough to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning?
I would be happy to.
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And you also have our HPI minute this morning, I understand.
Well, I am prepared to talk about our safety HPI moment. So tomorrow is the first day of fall. Can you believe it? COVID has been with us now for about 6 months, and it appears it's going to be with us for quite some time. I read last week in the Wenatchee World that 4 more people had passed away from COVID and here locally, and that brought about a great amount of sadness to me. And as I was thinking about this, it led me to think about what else I can be doing personally to help out, in addition to wearing a mask and social distancing. And there's one really important thing that I think that we can all do to help ourselves and to help everyone else during this time, and that is to get a flu shot. It's important to help ourselves. Prevention is number one with the flu. You know, getting a flu shot helps us prevent from getting the flu, and it's really important to stay healthy at this time. It can reduce the severity of the flu if you do happen to get it. And helping others is also very important. Getting a flu shot helps protect the same group of people who are vulnerable to COVID and helps keep them well. Those people are people with chronic health conditions, people over 65, and those in care facilities, among others. And it helps save the healthcare resources for the people who have COVID if we don't need to seek out medical treatment for influenza. It helps keep our healthcare workers well, and it keeps the hospitals and the ICU beds open. The flu season is usually in full swing by December. The CDC says the best time to get a flu shot is in the months of September and October. It's really easy to get a flu shot. If you are working and you have the opportunity to take advantage of a health and wellness screening at work, many employers offer these. Chelan PUD employees are invited to participate in our wellness screenings that are going on right now at Confluence Occupational Health. Local pharmacies are also a great place to get a flu shot, and they're usually free without a medical they're free on your medical insurance plan, excuse me. Local places such as Walgreens, Safeway, Walmart, or Costco offer flu shots. A lot of them do it on a walk-in basis. You can make appointments. I was on Costco's website, and I noticed you can book an appointment there, but you don't have to. I will say, if you have any concerns about getting a flu shot, that it's a good idea to talk to your doctor to learn more about that, because it's not the only way to get immunized. And I just want to leave you all with some encouragement to go ahead and get your flu shot, to stay as healthy as possible, and to help keep our medical resources available for the ongoing COVID response.
Thank you very much. That is very timely and a very good reminder about our flu shot. So thank you very much, Allison.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us. Any items shall be subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. Do I hear any such request? Do we have a motion to approve consent?
So moved, Ellis.
Do we have a second?
I second the motion.
Thank you, commissioners. It's been moved and seconded. Although, is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approving the consent agenda, please do so by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. And the ayes have it. Consent carries. Steve, at this time, if I may, can I turn the meeting over to you?
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, I would like to start with a discussion about our cycle of personal ownership awardees for this month. They are Jim McDonnell and Bing White. We always are trying to look at when we get nominees for cycle of personal ownership, there are lots of great work that goes on around the district. But we're looking for things that are relevant to specific issues that we're focused on right now. And this one's a great example of that. Jim and Bing really went out of their way to focus on how they could create a safe environment in a world of COVID-19. They work together closely. They touch a lot of the same things. They focused on how they could communicate with each other and then take actions that would reduce the potential risk of spread of the infection, and really have done an extraordinary job and have become role models for others in terms of how best to be able to manage in a COVID-19 world. So I would like to recognize them. I understand that possibly Jim is on the line. I'm hoping that he's there at least. As I understand it, it's Bing's day off, although we hope maybe he might have called in. We'll check just to see. Jim, if you're there, we would love to give you the opportunity to say something to the board.
Yes, Steve, I am. Thanks for the invite. I think that the one thing that I would like to say to the board and to the management, both directly, my personal supervisor and Tony Nelson, those guys have really given us a lot of tools. The board, the general manager, you guys taken a solid stance on the virus and what it means to work closely with other people during and in this environment. It was important to be able to seek out our own methods for the specifics of how we were going to work through this thing. And with Bing and I, it was a discussion of, how distracted we had become with both not knowing exactly what we were supposed to be doing because there are no real specifics. We've all been learning as we go through this whole process. We were able to talk through and develop our own programs so that we could sort of compartmentalize the COVID part of our job, get it addressed, get it out of the way, get it off the table so that we understand what the boundaries of that meant and so that we could perform the work that we normally do that encompasses its own immediate hazards and not have that looming distraction of, am I doing this right? Am I coming too close? Are there people invading my space? Is there, what's my impact on someone else? All of those things crossed our mind. So we just sat down and came up with a plan that really we've been working on through, at least with CM Wireman, we've been working on all year up to this point. And Bing and I just had the opportunity to really refocus it in a different environment than we were used to. I was working in the switchyard previously. It's much more controlled. There are far fewer people working there. It was easier to segregate the space, limit the number of people that had access to the space, and approach it from that direction. But being in the powerhouse, there's a lot more people and a lot more movement and a lot more mechanical hazard than you have at the switchyard. So we were able to get those things addressed and actually develop a boundary that you could keep an eye on indirectly. And if anybody encroached on your space or you had to encroach on someone else's, you could communicate with that person. Tony got us some wireless headsets, and we were able to use those to help maintain our 6-foot distance so that we weren't standing on top of each other trying to deal with the noises of the powerhouse and still be able to communicate. So just a big thank you. I know the district spent a lot of money trying to protect the workforce, and that was it meant a lot to a lot of us to be given the resources and the tools to be able to deal with this in a way that made sense to us and get the work performed that we were being asked to perform. So I thank you.
Let me just check real quick. Bing, are you on the line today? Okay, we were not expecting him. Commissioners, any thoughts?
This is Commissioner Smith. In listening to the processes that they have gone through, it highlights for me that I think all of us have in our own personal lives faced this challenge of the personal space, especially when it comes to family, let alone coworkers and friends. And I just have to state my utmost respect for what Jim and Bing have done in the workplace, because there's in the workplace, everybody comes from such a different place in life that creating a system like that could be really powerful in keeping us healthy. So thank you very, very much.
If I could just jump in and say I really appreciate not only the steps and measures that you have implemented, but I also appreciate your approach and attitude to the issue and to the problem and the challenges that we face. It makes the whole organization stronger, not just from the standpoint of remediating perhaps any viral effects, but also just the fact that you're willing to embrace the environment that we find ourselves in and the predicament and the health issue, the virus, and work forward in a manner that makes us all stronger. So I really want to extend my gratitude for you guys taking the approach you did. Thank you so much.
And if I could just close this section with one other thought. You know, we talk about with human performance improvement that employees are the solution, and I think this is a great example of how Jim and Bing said, we can define the solution. Let's go make that happen. So congratulations to them. And, Jim, thank you for being here today.
Thanks again for the invite.
Okay, we're going to move to agenda item 4. This is we are making some structural changes inside the organization as the needs of our customers change. And Andrew Grissel will be presenting on moving from energy efficiency to customer energy solutions. Andrew?
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, commissioners. Over the last several months, either I or someone from my team has been before you with updates on either new or updated programs. And These are things that are different than our historic energy conservation focus, items such as our electric vehicle strategy, updating our solar program, or looking more in depth at a low-income, high-energy burden program. And so this presentation is designed to wrap it all together and really just providing information on why and how we're moving from energy efficiency focus to a customer energy solutions focus, taking all of those customer programs that we're working on and wrapping them up and ensuring that both the district as well as the customers are receiving value and that their experience is great. And so there's a one place to talk to or to focus their communications with. And so slide two, why we're here. So I'm going to provide a description on how added areas of focus are driving a redefinition of both our team's mission as well as our name change. Provide some background on the drivers of these changes, share the redefined mission, and then, of course, seek feedback from the board, from you, in order to ensure that what we're doing is consistent with what you are, where you would like us to go as well. And so if I go to slide three, you'll see that talk about why the change. And this slide focuses on four areas. One is our customers. We want to delight our customers. We want to meet their needs. We want to do so in a manner that provides them with value and also provides the district with value. We want to align our work and staff with the direction of our strategic and business plans. Over the last couple of years, we've included additional programs that I mentioned before, like electric vehicles, enhancing our low-income programs, updating solar programs. We want to accurately reflect the work the team is doing now and into the future. And so when I get to the mission, you'll see it was fairly rigid. And so we want to open that up a little, provide some more flexibility to support our team. And then also want to look at aligning work and staff to industry standards. There's a lot of work out there that's been done, surveys of other utilities and what they're doing, and how they're moving their energy efficiency team, and I'll show you, why in the next slide, but how they're moving that energy efficiency team into a team that is looking at a little bit more broad services and programs to support the customers. And the slide,
Andrew,
this is done. Oh,
Andrew,
yeah.
Before we move on, I want to call attention on slide three to a particular word choice that you guys have made to put on the slide. And that's my first bullet point, the use of the word delight. Delight means that we are more than exceeding the basic needs of the customer. If your team is focused on delight, that is a level well above meeting the needs of our customer. And I don't know why that word jumped out at me, but it did. And congratulations to you and your team for wanting to delight our customers, which is a much higher standard than anything else that I've seen us put out. And so without, too much more focus on the word, I just want to say thank you for that. That's an indication of attitude, and attitude shapes our behavior, and our behavior shapes our outcomes. And that's a great word choice, so thank you.
You're welcome, Commissioner Bolts. And that word was chosen very carefully and specifically in that the old paradigm was just meeting what the customer's needs, but that can, not provide great customer satisfaction. And so we want to, as long as there's value created for both the customer and the utility, that is what we want to look for and what we want to strive to do. And that's shown. I mean, this graph is a little bit small, I know, or the image on the slide three is a little bit small, but this was an image put together by the Edison Electric Institute, and really looking at how individual customer services are becoming more and more the what utilities are looking at doing. In the past, we looked at all the commercial, industrial, residential and sectors sort of the same. One kind of homogenous group, customers within those groups. Here's a program. If it works for you, great. If not, you know, great. And what's really happening is that we're looking at a more individualized customer experience, within reason, of course. But customers want action and advice they can take action on. And so, you know, it's like our virtual audits. Even though we're in a COVID environment right now, you know, we've been conducting several virtual audits, and so far we're getting great feedback on those from our customers. You know, some of them want to be connected to technology even more, but some of them don't. And so how do we sort of balance that and be flexible to meet the needs of both the customer groups? You know, there's customers looking or needing more tailored services. An example of that's our strategic energy management program, where we're going into facilities and not offering a one-size-fits-all, but really looking at, okay, how do you operate, and how can we get savings for you, and then what other actions can we take to help increase those savings even more, and do so in a manner that provides value to both utility and all the other customers that are not participating, as well as that customer itself. And we're looking, you know, of course, we're updating, as you've heard, our solar program, and, you know, trying to find a way to both provide more value to customers and the utility, but also trying to increase the amount of participation in that program. And we actually, in some of the survey results we saw, there were several responses talking about, you know, trying to find a way to advance greater participation of programs. You know, is there a way to do that and still create value for the utility also? And so, and then we're going to be having AMI come on board, and energy management tools that will be supported by that new technology. We'll be able to take advantage of those. And, you know, there's one up there at the very top that says wind energy. Well, you know, for us, I would put in transportation electrification. You know, how are our customers viewing that, and where do they want us to move toward, move in that direction? And what makes sense for us to do? And so we've got a strategy we laid out earlier on that we're following. And, you know, part of that will be, after a couple of years, to look back and say, are we going in the right direction? So, so that's another one. And so that's kind of why we're moving towards this change. Our customers are changing. The customers, what they're looking for is changing. Where our customers are coming from are changing. I just was on a call last week, and the number of our customers that are moving into the area that are going to be telecommuting, they're coming in from different areas with different expectations. And, you know, we're trying to balance all of that information and all of those customer desires. Again, looking at value for the customer, looking at value to the utility. And I think our energy efficiency team is in a great position to do this. So we'll move into slide four. We're building on a really strong foundation of success. You know, since 2009, we've added 20 average megawatts of energy efficiency savings to the programs. We have great program implementation. We exceed our targets. We're generally under budget. Our customer trust, we have high customer trust and high satisfaction ratings on our surveys that we provide. We're really engaged at the national and the regional level. And this is important so that we can share ideas and understand and learn best practices. There are utilities that have done a lot of these things out there already. Let's learn from them. Let's see what we can do, how we can improve on that. And then our innovative engineering and design, you know, we've been ahead on a lot of things. You know, I would say our fruit industry with the CO2 scrubbers, the variable frequency drives, a lot of those things that we've been doing for a long time that continue to add value there. And that's, you know, looking ahead and trying to be ahead of that curve and seeing what makes sense. But we're going to continue our focus on energy efficiency. That provides us with a great amount of value. It provides our customers with a great amount of value. We don't want to lose sight of that. We are going to refresh some of our current programs, as I've mentioned already, you know, our solar program. We're looking at that sort of two pathway, a regular rebate program, and then, you know, is there a way we can increase that participation rate through some other means? Another example is going from our in-person audits to virtual audits, you know, being flexible to meet the demands of the operating environment that we're within. We're looking at, you know, our new programs. You know, we want to be able to incorporate from the new. Yes.
Yeah, I'm really curious. I don't know if you're going to go into it further.
What does a virtual audit look like?
Okay. No, I can. I wasn't planning on it, but I can take a quick little detour. And so a virtual audit looks like we have a scheduling system that the customer can put in that some of our staff who do these, we set up time that is what they're going to do. And so then customers can go in and schedule time on a scheduling platform that then the customer representative contacts them, or the utility representative contacts them. And it's and we try to be kind of application indifferent. And so we try to meet the customer to the best one. If they want to use FaceTime, we can use FaceTime. If they want to use Zoom, we can use Zoom. And so it's whatever the platform is for the, from the visual standpoint. And then just as if we had someone in person there, we walk the customer through and to show us, you know, okay, what does your heat pump look like? Do you have a heat pump? Maybe explain to them what a heat pump is. What kind of water heater do you have? What kind of furnace? What kind of, you know, lighting do you have? So we walk through this checklist that we would do in person that we do with the customer. And so it does a couple things. One, it makes the customer a lot more informed on the energy using devices in their home because they're actually going and doing it, looking at it that way. And it provides us with the opportunity to continue that, you know, virtual face-to-face, but kind of that face-to-face interaction with the customers. And, you know, Josh, I was talking to Josh last week, and he's like, I love doing these virtual audits because I really miss the customer interaction. And he's someone who's really focused on that customer. And so, and Sergio is the same. They're the two primary team members that do these, and it's like they've missed that customer interaction. And so at least this provides them with a way to do that.
So does the customer
show
you various parts of the house?
Yes. Yep. And then we would go through and say, okay, here are the eight items we're looking for, you know, can you actually get into your crawl space and show us what the installation looks like? Some you can, some you can't. But a lot of it, you know, focusing on HVAC equipment, lighting equipment, even appliances. You know, we can provide some input on appliances and those things. But yes, the customer physically walks through the house as we're with them on their device.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And then I think we were down to we're adding new programs. We want to incorporate opportunities from the new AMI system. To support our customer needs and efficiency opportunities. There are going to be opportunities there with the amount of data that will be available that we can look through and help our customers with. That provides platforms for, you know, energy management applications that we can dovetail off of. And so we want to be available and ready for when that system is up and running to be able to use that information and use that system to provide our customers with greater opportunities for savings. And then, of course, our low-income, high-energy burden custody program. And we're well on our way working through that. Josh has led several meetings with that, with the consultant that we're working on with the stakeholders, and so that is moving forward. And of course, we still have our current, like I-937, as well as new reporting and compliance obligations, like the Clean Energy Transformation Act. So there are going to be reporting obligations and reporting requirements that we're going to continue needing to do there. So making sure that we're set up that way. So as we go to slide four, so as we thought about all this, you know, the first thing when looked at our mission, and our mission, although it met the needs of the time, because this was right when I-937 came along, initiative 937, tongue twister for me. Came along, and we wanted to acquire cost-effective conservation, and we were also looking at things like pool raises and those things, and so we also wanted to support investigations of energy development opportunities. Fairly narrow, met the needs of the time, but we wanted to look for something that was, you know, a little bit more flexible and a little more customer-focused. And so, you know, our proposal is to provide customers with effective solutions to their changing energy needs in a manner that enhances customer experience, engagement, and equity while providing value to Chelan PUD. And it's it encompasses a lot more of what we do, as well as providing flexibility for the future. It focuses more on our customers across the board. And so we felt that this really did meet the mission of what the team is both working on now and as well as moving towards that future. If we go to slide six, just next steps, we'll continue to focus on energy efficiency. As I mentioned earlier, this provides a great value to our customers in the district. We're not going to lose sight of that. We're going to continue implementing and focusing on those programs. And then with the new programs, we're going to ensure that we plan for them, that they're in the business plan, that we've got the what's needed planned out, and that we're not just adding things to add things, that they fit within where we want to go, and not only within our business plan, but then that rolls up to the district business plan and then the district the balanced scorecard objectives and the strategic plan. So ensuring that all of the things are rolling up to meet the values that we are looking for. And so, fairly short presentation. I've got quite the time for questions, comments, thoughts.
Andrew, this is Gary, and I had a question. The other day I was over at Costco, and I noticed that the LED lights there carried a discount. And I've noted that over on the west side, a lot of times Costco's over there would do that. I hadn't seen it at our store before. Did your program have anything to do with that?
Yes, we've been in the signs. We have to go around every once in a while and check on signs because signs come and go. But yes, that is one of the programs that we help fund, and they do it in a couple of ways. Because it's a Costco that serves a couple different territories, they use some sales data and information.
Andrew, did we lose you?
Sorry. Yeah, no, you didn't lose me. I had a coworker come in, and I thought I'd locked my office door, so that was my fault. So I apologize for that. That is something we have funded, and actually that is coming to an end. That's one of the programs when we were talking about the marketing, our marketing update a couple weeks ago, that Simple Steps program, that's a program that becomes, that is going away due to some large funders not funding it anymore. It's a big regional type of thing, so you need a really big base of the larger funders to fund it. And but we're going to continue to look for ways we can support our customers with lighting. So, but yes, that is something we have funded.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. If there are no other questions, thank you, Andrew. Appreciate that update. We'll move next to Agenda Item 5, and this is an update on regional water issues. Just a reminder that we are a part of the regional water system that shares source supply with the city of East Wenatchee and city of Wenatchee. Ron Slabaugh, you are up.
Thank you, Steve. Morning, Commissioners. Ron Slabaugh, Water Wastewater Manager. Go on to slide 2, please. Thank you. Why we're here today, just to share information and seek feedback, we have two items to discuss. One is regional water rights, and second is just an update on the search for a second source. No formal action will be requested. Next slide. Thank you. Water rights. Just quick background. The three regional members, of course, us, City, East Wenatchee Water District, originally contributed 15,879 acre-feet of water to regional. There's 13,277 acre-feet that can be withdrawn from East Bank, and the remainder of that can be withdrawn from the surplus wells or the backup wells that were provided by the East Wenatchee Water District over in Douglas County. You might recall back in 2012, regional purchase additional water from the Pioneer Water Users Association, just over 6,000 acre feet. And you can see that not all of that is consumptive because it was irrigation water. There's 1,770 acre feet of consumptive. All in, regional water rights total just over 22,000 acre feet. And right now from East Bank, withdrawals to supply all three members are about half that, or just over 11,000 acre feet. Next slide, please. Okay. Back in 2016, Regional was approached and ultimately entered into an agreement with Crown Columbia, where Crown wanted access to that Pioneer right, which Regional had placed into trust, in order to lease it out to other users for temporary beneficial use. And between 2016 and now, Crown has not been able to find anybody to utilize that water right. It's primarily because it can be interrupted because of the temporary nature of its use. However, recently, Crown found a client at Granite Farms down in the Port of Walla Walla that would like to lease the entire consumptive portion plus some of the non-consumptive, a total of 2,082 acre feet for the next 12 years. Next slide, please. Payments to Regional over that period calc out to about $2.66 million, and in comparison, Regional paid $2.5 million for that entire water right 8 years ago. Regional is currently negotiating an amendment to the 2016 agreement with Crown in order to address this transaction. And just keep in mind, that amendment is something that must be approved by the elected bodies of all three regional members to be effective. Next slide, please. There's another right that's come up. The city of Wenatchee was able recently to acquire a claim from Lineage. Now, Lineage has historically operated a facility just behind headquarters, between headquarters and the Wenatchee River down, or excuse me, the Columbia River down off of Worthen Street. Lineage pumped water out of the Columbia River off the platform at the end of Fifth Street, and it was used for cooling purposes. The city has no need for the water right, and of course they would like to monetize that, has offered it to sale, for sale, to Regional. Next slide.
Hey, Ron, before you go to the next slide, this is Steve McKenna.
Sure.
When you use the term claim, a water claim, is that term the same as a water right?
Right. Yeah, water rights take on several different forms. You have claims and permits. And so for the purpose of this discussion, think of those as being used interchangeably.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. The one advantage to Regional purchasing this right is that it would be kept local versus transferred out of the area. I know when we had water rights discussions in the past, there is some sensitivity about water rights that are local to the greater Wenatchee area being, say, transferred downstream, because once they are transferred downstream, they can never be brought back. One possibility if Regional were to acquire this right is that it could be leased, just like the Pioneer right is being leased through Crown, provided that there was somebody that was interested in leasing that right. The amount on the face of the claim, it's 780 acre feet. However, we have seen some records that indicate that as much as 1,900 acre feet has actually been used. The city has, their initial offer to Regional is for that 780 acre feet at a price of $1,400 per acre feet. You see, that's just over $1 million. But that is quite a bit below the current market value for water rights in this area and water rights along the Columbia River. Next slide. The city would initiate the process leading to, including the change application with the Department of Ecology, similar to what we went through with Pioneer back prior to 2012. And the city is proposing that if there is more water than the 780 acre feet, perhaps somewhere between that and up to the 1,900 acre feet, that Regional would pay the difference. But it works both ways. If it turns out that through the evaluation process with ecology, there's less than 780 acre feet, then the city would reimburse regional for any amount less than that 780 acre feet. Next slide.
Hey, Ron.
Yes.
Randy Smith here. And if you could refresh my memory on the difference between consumptive and non-consumptive use.
Sure. So consumptive, say, for example, the water is pulled out of the ground or pulled out of the river. Irrigation is the best example, where water is pulled out of the river, put into a canal, and then the different users withdraw that water from the canal, and they irrigate with it. And if it's irrigated and nothing returns back to the canal or back to the river, that's fully consumptive. But for irrigation, you have your water for consumption and your conveyance water, you know, the water that you need to carry the water down the canal. And typically that conveyance water would be returned back to the surface water. And that was the case with the Pioneer, right? So if it's returned, then it's non-consumptive. So in the case of the lineage, right, there's a portion of it that very well could be consumptive and a portion that could be non-consumptive. And all that would be determined through the various steps leading up to the change application.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Regional supply, we've updated the board a number of times. I think since about 2014, regional has been seeking another source where we have, I believe we supply close to 70,000 people from the East Bank Aquifer through the regional water system right now, and that is anticipated to grow to 100,000 in the next several decades, and we're relying on that single source. As I mentioned previously, it is limited. We have capacity withdrawal, 13,277 acre feet. That's our water right. That also happens to be about the physical capacity of East Bank. So we'd like to find another source. Ideally, we'd like to find one similar to East Bank, and not only for future capacity, but also for reliability and redundancy. Efforts to date have been focused primarily on groundwater in Chelan County. Because groundwater, it's less regulated than surface water. We don't have treatment, we don't have quite as extensive a treatment requirements. And there's a number of potential aquifers that were tentatively identified down by Rock Island Dam. And over the last few years, we've drilled some test wells. Next slide, please. And here you see in the middle, test well 1 through 4. Test well 1 is located in similar proximity to to Powerhouse 2's existing wells. And you see trending up north, upriver to test well 4, which is just south of the PUD's property line with Alcoa. We weren't successful in any of those wells. The hydrogeologist took another look and identified 2 other locations. One was test well 5, which is on some Chelan County property. And that was drilled and tested here in the last month, I believe, and wasn't productive enough for a regional supply. Test well 6 is on some property that's owned by the Goodfellow brothers, and regional acquired an agreement with them to go up and drill a test well and pump it. And that hasn't been done yet. That's anticipated to be completed later this year. Next slide. So our summary with regional, of course, what we're doing overall, we're wanting to provide all of our customers with safe, reliable supply of water well into the future. And a few of the things that we spoke about here today, we're planning our source improvements for both capacity and, of course, reliability and redundancy. We want to make sure that we have enough water rights well into the future, because there certainly aren't any more that are being created. So when we feel that it provides value to our customers, we would seek to acquire those rights. And as we found out with the Crown right, those water rights certainly have value, and where we can monetize those through a safe lease arrangement and a allow a third party to put that water to beneficial use, help offset the cost of regional's future source improvements. We feel that that's good stewardship, good use of those resources, again, bringing value back to our customers. Next slide, please. Our next steps here, the Crown Water Rights Lease, that addendum that's being prepared between regional and Crown. Ultimately, that'll be finalized, and we will need to bring that back to the board here for approval. Same thing with Lineage. We have not yet begun developing an agreement, but with your concurrence today, we could certainly authorize regional's attorney to work with the city on developing an agreement for purchase of that lineage, right? And on the second source, a lot of what we do in the future is going to be dependent upon the last test well that's going to be drilled there. That is the last location that we have found for an aquifer in Chelan County. And if that is not successful, we're going to have to develop next steps for capacity and redundancy on a go-forward basis. We do still have time. The existing East Bank source in the last regional comp plan is forecasted to provide adequate capacity through the year 2035. It's 15 years away, but those 15 years can go by pretty quickly. So this isn't anything that we want to grow complacent with, and we will continue to look for additional sources so we can make sure that we have those online well before we need them. I believe that's all I have. Any questions or comments?
Ron, this is Randy, and I have another question. I'm sitting here looking at your presentation and at all of the wells that have not been successful. Do we get to a point at regional, at some point, where we revisit looking at surface withdrawal?
Yes, Randy, we do. And I think one mentioned next steps pending outcome. It very well could be that a large surface water treatment plant would be the only way that we could have a single source with the capacity and the reliability of East Bank. It would bring with it some pretty considerable costs, not only for the initial construction, but also operation. However, you know, given that we are going to be in the next few decades serving 100,000 people, it is something that we're going to have to look at. Is that a preliminary search that we conducted back in the 2014 timeframe in Douglas County did not reveal another aquifer similar to East Bank. Now, you might recall that when we had USGS do that study on East Bank years ago, I believe it was them that referred to it as a world-class aquifer, and it is. It has excellent water quality, excellent capacity, and we certainly like to find another one like it, but we very well may not, and it could be that a surface water ends up being our best alternative.
Thank you.
Board concur with moving forward and developing an agreement with the city for acquisition of the lineage, right?
Let me try to put it this way. Is there any objection to proceeding on this?
Commissioners, can we...
This is Ann. You know, I was just reading, what did you... ask if we could go ahead with this proposal.
Is there any objection to developing it with essentially the contract, which would come back for approval by the board at a future date?
The contract, I apologize, I'm trying to catch up here with which contract?
This would be the city of Wenatchee has captured this right from lineage and is now, in effect, proposing to transfer it to regional so that we would be able to benefit from it as well as the city of East Wenatchee.
Okay, so we're not talking about the Crown Corporation the regional, the leasing of water to Crown Corporation?
No, that one would also be coming back. That is proceeding. The work is being done to put the contract together, but it would also come back to the board for approval at a future date.
Okay, that's the one I have concerns about. So I'll just maybe offline. I'll do some more work on trying to understand that. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I would just note that there were some concerns the board identified the first time we went through this a few years ago, and I think we were able to resolve those, and we're taking that guidance into effect as we put this proposal together, or work to put this proposal together. Okay, so our intention would be to continue to move forward with both the Crown Water Rights lease and the Lineage Water Rights purchase, recognizing that they do have to come back to the board for future approval, and so we will be investing the time in trying to make sure that those are coming together.
I think that's a good step forward, Steve. Personally.
And, good summary.
And thank you. For those of you, I believe other board members know, but Commissioner Arsenault is our representative to Regional Water as well, so he would be conveying any views of the board there. So if anyone has issues, concerns, it'd be good to check in, not just with us as staff, but also with Commissioner Arsenault.
And I'd be happy to chat with anyone who might have questions.
Okay, with that, I think we are ready to move to agenda item 6. Brett Pickford is here in the room today. We welcome him. I think Dan Garrison was going to be on the line as well. We want to talk about the Rocky Reach Large Unit Waterfield Hub conversion. Brett, let me turn this over to you.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, Commissioners. This is Brett Pickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management, and with me is
Dan Garrison, Director of Hydro Operations.
Today we'd like to review with you a staff recommendation to convert units C10 and C11 at Rocky Reach from oil-filled to water-filled turbine hubs. In the business section today, we have a resolution that would follow up with this presentation.
And Brett, if you would just, in case folks are not online, if you just identify which page you're on.
Yes. So I'm on... say slide 5, but I think it's only slide 3. So on slide 3, it's a slide that shows a cross-section of a turbine hub, and this slide shows our work scope. District staff has been working on the C8 to C11 turbine hubs since 2013. We're very familiar with the design, the operation of these with our work with Voith, as we learned on what the issues were that we had with the turbines. And so with Voith, we've been able to also look at now the potential to change them to water-filled. With the work that's already underway, the area that's shown in green are items that we've already purchased to refurbish these turbines. And so through looking at converting them to water, we've identified that there are some items shown in purple that we would need to replace to convert, and then some modifications we would need to make to the upper part of the hub as well.
Yeah, this was slide 4. There are a number of advantages to converting to water-filled hubs. We will expect a reduction in oil leaks. As you may recall, that the oil inside the turbine hub is not contained past the hub itself. It goes directly to the Columbia River, and our ability to capture it is stressed. We have to deploy oil absorbent booms in the open river, that sort of thing. So this would reduce those kinds of leaks, which is definitely a positive for improving our stewardship of the river. Also would result in avoiding fines and other corrective actions from Department of Ecology. We also expect a reduction in operating costs through the oil purchases will be less. Our maintenance of those of the oil, cleaning and disposal will be less. Reduction of maintenance costs, and overall, we have a lot of activity in monitoring oil leaks or making sure that we aren't leaking. If there are leaks, we have cleanup costs, and then there's equipment to be changed and seals, that sort of thing, on the turbine itself. Those would be dramatically reduced. And then, of course, the outage time associated with all of the above. We would not have to do the number of inspections that we do now, or the time required to change those seals out. So those are some of the examples of the advantages we would expect to see. Next slide, please.
So why haven't we converted to water-filled hubs to date? And that's probably because there's limited history out there. We don't have any in our fleet. There aren't any units on the Columbia River. And so we've been working with other owners to study and to evaluate this. And so our primary concern with switching is the use of the bushing material. And this is the material that fits between the rotating metal surfaces, so particularly the blade trunnions. And what we're concerned about is the wear that would occur by operating in water. And so premature wear results in the unit having to be completely disassembled. And because of that expense and time, to date we've been cautious about moving in that direction. The one good thing is the wear can be at it more substantial going forward because we don't have to worry about oil leaking into the river. It would just be pure water. But we would have to be concerned about once they wear excessively, then we could get blade strikes. So the other is, what's the friction that's involved with this bushing material? The traditional bushing materials operated in water would have much higher friction factors. And so that's precluded converting over because with these higher loads, we get a reduced operating life. And also with the higher loads, it could be that our governors don't have the appropriate pressure to be able to pitch the blades full steep, which gives us our full capability of the units. So why now? And that's because going forward, there are a number of plants worldwide, and now there's three in the U.S. that have converted to water. There's new materials, and new in this case is not like new this year. But we've identified materials that have been in service in the military for about 20 years now that are that have very low frictions, and they're operating in these water and in dry air environments on helicopters and submarines. We've done extensive analysis on these units 8 through 11 over the past several years with Voith, and we've done a range of fatigue life analysis with different friction factors with these various bushings. We're also able to evaluate what effect there could be on the governors if over time the frictions increase on the use of these materials.
This is Dan again. I'm on slide 7. This particular slide shows the amount of oil associated with the generator and turbine units, specifically for units C10 and C11. I'd like to remind ourselves that both Brett and I went to Europe, specifically Sweden, in 2015 to investigate the technologies associated with using other mediums in the hub besides oil. And this is a progression of the technology that we observed in Sweden. So this chart here identifies all the primary oil reservoirs within a given unit. We have the Turner Runner Hub, Governor Sump and Accumulators, Wicked Gate Servos, Turbine Guide Bearings, and Thrust Bearings. And as you can see at the bottom of that second column, for each unit of C10 and 11, we have a little over 13,000 gallons of oil associated with that unit. If you go over a couple of columns to the secondary containment, all of our oils, except for the turbine runner, have secondary containment. And what that means is that we have the ability to capture an oil leak, or we can intercept it before it escapes into the river environment. The turbine runner hub is largely that source of oil that our ability to contain is very much restricted. So as manager of these facilities, I'm always looking at these volumes. I'm trying to find ways to either provide secondary containment or to eliminate that source of oil entirely. And so this chart shows that by replacing the oil in the turbine hub with water, we can take 5,500 gallons out of the C10, C11 unit structure and reduce the amount of oil that don't have secondary containment. Next slide, please. So this is looking at Rocky Reach in totality. We're talking about just C10 and C11 here. But what you can see is that on the fourth column, we have over 100,000 gallons of oil associated with all of the generator turbines. We are removing 5,500 gallons with this proposal. And that takes us down to 97,000 gallons, or a little bit in excess of that. What I'm also looking here for is this is a 22% reduction in oil volumes in Rocky Reach that do not have secondary containment. Next slide. Sorry, I lost track. Activities that we're doing throughout the district in this vein of effort is we are also, as you know, modernizing the units of Powerhouse 2. That is similar in that we'll be removing approximately 2,000 gallons per unit by going to an air hub arrangement. We are also, as part of our agreement with Riverkeeper and DOE, performing a very detailed oil tracking and oil volume monitoring. We are also in development of discharge water quality. That's part of our NPDES permits. We have assessed all of the lubricants and greases that we use in the powerhouses and seeking to replace those with environmentally friendly lubricants. We are in the process of doing that. And then, as always, and this is ongoing, we are improving ways to contain any leaks or spills that may occur. Next slide.
So, therefore, district staff is recommending through a field work order that we've prepared to authorize the general manager to execute Field Work Order 304 for design, manufacture, and installation of water-filled turbine hubs for C10 and C11 with Voith Hydro, Inc. If it's okay if I deviate from this presentation real quick, this morning we actually put together a slide that I think a little more clearly shows where the oil currently is, it's going to be replaced with water. So it's this area with kind of the red hash area. So this volume now is that 2,700 gallons that's filled with oil that we would be proposing to replace with water. We still have some oil that's in where the servo is operated.
I don't know about others, but I do not have that picture. I'm not on Skype.
Okay, we can send it to you. Going to the, we could utilize the presentation, and I could show you on our scope slide that the.
So this is what is actually slide three, but it's identified as slide five. So it's the cross cut picture of the turbine.
Okay. I'm back up there.
So, yes, on slide 3, with the colored rendering, there are some white areas in between the yellow at the top of the hub, extending down in between the two blue surfaces and the bottom of the hub. All of that volume is what would be now filled or proposed to be filled with water.
So, are you ready for questions?
Yes, please.
I want to go back to the high level, if you will, on your decision-making process of what has finally convinced you that we need to give this a shot. And one of the things that we've talked about for years at our utility is how the over the last 30 or 40 years, the change in how we operate our turbines potentially may or may not be having additional wear impact on our turbines. When you visited other people that were using the waterless turbines, are they using those turbines in a similar fashion as we are in terms of the stoppage and startage and all other activities associated with that? I'm just curious what you saw in that process.
Yeah, Dan, if it's okay, I'll start. So in our tours of Sweden in 2015, what we did see is those units are not started and stopped as much as what we saw. And when we came back from that trip, we met with management and discussed the fact that we didn't think we were ready yet for that technology. And so that's why it didn't progress as we worked on units 8 through 11. Currently, so why we think it is again, these new materials that we've identified, we've seen that they've been in service in a different industry for, again, about 20 years, particularly in their use on submarines. So that's given us some confidence that they can work in a water environment and last for a long time. We also, as part of our design build with GE, are proposing an endurance test that's going to occur in October of this year, and where we're going to be accelerating that through a series of special tests to help identify what longevity that we can get. There is a plant in the U.S. that's approaching about 20 years using a bushing material, one of the options, and so that's our other case study that's showing us that it looks like it can survive. And in that plant, they do have fairly frequent start stops like we do.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Brett, but I believe we're also reserving the alternative to replace the water with oil in the event the performance of the unit or wear is greater than we were expecting. Is that correct, Brett?
Yeah, and we're trying to take a kind of a belt and suspenders approach in that we're going to use a bushing material that will have a coating on it that gives us this low friction that's been used in submarines. And if that coating wears off, we still have a bushing material similar to today. And if we see friction values increasing, then we can go ahead and put oil back in the hubs to help reduce that, to maintain the capacity that we have today.
I will say, you got my attention with materials used in submarines, because that's salt water we're talking about, and that's a corrosive environment.
Yes, and corrosive, and there's all kinds of impurities, you know, in the ocean water as well. And in these hubs, we're planning on using very clean, filtered water, neutral pH.
Thank you for your answers.
You're welcome.
Commissioners, if there are no further questions, what I'd like to do is suggest that we're going to modify the agenda some here. We are, at this point, basically finished with the morning session and the opportunity to move into the afternoon session. one of the items in the afternoon session is agenda item 14, which is the resolution that pursues this approach to the water field turbine hub. It also has a couple of other cleanup items in it. And I would like to suggest that we move to that item 14 now because it allows us to take best advantage of our staff's time. Brett is here and would allow him to not need to return this afternoon.
I think that sounds commissioners in agreement.
Works for me.
Okay with me.
Yes.
Okay, Brett, would you go forward with this? Let me actually read it. This is Agenda Item 14, a resolution ratifying field work order change orders number 2-14, 2-15, and approving execution of field work order change orders number 3-04 for the second and third units under contract number 14-22 with Boyth Hydro Incorporated of York, Pennsylvania for Rocky Reach units C8 through C11 turbine repairs.
Yes, this resolution has two field work orders that were executed by district staff as delegated by the commission. And so those are being brought forward so that they can be ratified. Field work order 2-14 was a net zero change in contract price. It consisted of $600,000 in deducts to the contract for assessment of liquidated damages for late completion of C9 in exchange for a negotiation of $600,000 for delaying units C10 and C11 by 2 years due to the work that we're having to do on units C1 through C7. Field work order change order 2-15 was for a downward adjustment in the contract price for C9 of about $575,437, and that was for shop and site unit rate allowance work that didn't need to be performed at the site or in the shop. So those result in a net deduct to the contract of $575,437.86. The new item would authorize the general manager to execute field work order 3-04 for the design and supply and work in their shop for units C10 and C11 for an amount of $2,902,332. District staff would work with Voith through the design effort, and if we had any concerns with going forward with the design, we could terminate the contract at that point. If district staff is comfortable, we'll proceed with Voith purchasing and manufacturing the materials and have them ready for when the district is ready to take unit C10 out of service or C11. The design criteria that we have in the field work order requires Voith to design for a minimum 20-year life for the trunnion bushings, and it's utilizing current start-stop information that we have today. And the warranty period for the work would be 5 years. Are there any questions?
And commissioners, I would just propose that as staff, we would commit to keeping the board informed if we make that decision of moving from design to implementation.
Commissioners, do we have any questions?
Yeah, this is Dennis. I'm assuming that is there no one else that does this work other than Voith?
GE Hydro does this work as well, as does Ondritz.
But what's unique about this is...
what's very unique about this is we've partnered with Voith to analyze these units extensively. And so we've spent about 5 years' time doing the holistic analysis of these units. So Voith is the original equipment manufacturer. They have all the drawings and knowledge of the original design and now this new design that we're converting. And so we feel most comfortable proceeding with them.
Okay. There's no bid requirement here.
Not as long as it's in scope, no.
As long as it's in scope?
Of our existing contracts.
Yes, so we believe this is in the existing scope because of all the extensive work that they've already done for the analysis, and you can see there in the green the replacement parts that they've already provided.
Yeah, Commissioner, sorry, I could have been more clear about that. So we would describe, for example, rehabilitation or the work already, and if we made a change or a shift from oil-filled to water-filled or any number of other changes to the contract that still constitute the quote-unquote repair of the car or the rehabilitation of the unit, then those are all going to be within scope. So if we had a new contract for a new project, then we would have a bid requirement.
And recall, this is part of the repair of C8 through 11, and
right.
That we were going to be started. Actually, we thought we would be underway on repairing C10 and 11 at this point, and then we had the challenges with C1 through 7 and delayed this work. We actually, at that time, thought, well, there's a bit of an advantage because it gives us some more time to think through this water-filled hub issue. So we're operating under an existing contract to repair C10 and 11 and just making a modification to allow this implementation of the water field hub.
Right. My questions are kind of it's approximately a little over $2 million, $230 million, and this is for my questions revolve around public transparency.
Yeah, Commissioner, interestingly in the law, and probably for reasons related to contracting and project scope to begin with, the dollar amount doesn't really impact whether or not something needs to be bid additionally or changed. It's whether or not the work that is being contemplated to be done differently, added, changed, is within what we call in the law the quote-unquote scope of the original project, rather than the dollar amount. Now, having said that, there's no reason that in this or other cases where we add scope, we couldn't go out and try to find some other competitive process. But the project team has to balance the disruption in the existing project and the contracting obligations and rights under the existing contract with what it might mean if you got, for example, a different contractor as a low bidder to come in and have to try to coordinate that work between the two contractors. And there are lots of challenges associated with that. So hopefully that helps. And I'm happy to talk about it further if that's not clear.
No, it's clear enough to me. I just want the public to be able to understand that it does matter in terms of scope if it's $50,000 or $2.3 million. Just why are we able to spend $2.3 million without going out to bid? Or $50,000 without going out to bid? It's an important concept publicly.
Yeah, and not always not always a perfectly clear one.
Thank you.
You bet.
If there are no other questions, I might ask that we go ahead and address the resolution 14 at this point, just so we can take care of that while Brett and Dan are here in case any other questions were to come up. Would that be okay with you, Commissioner Arsenault?
That would be fine, yes.
In that case, I would move approval of Resolution 14.
Second.
I second.
It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 And those opposed say nay. The ayes have it. It's approved.
Thank you, Commissioners. What I'd like to do, and this is going to feel a bit like we're wandering through the agenda, but I really am trying to manage for staff time to make sure that folks are able to best accomplish their work today. We'd like to move to a manager item, John Stoll. Is Dan Mosher on the line today?
Yes.
So we'd like to have Dan provide an update on the mutual aid that we provided to Douglas PUD as a result of the fires. There's been a lot of work that's been going on over there under difficult circumstances. So, Dan, take it away. Dan, if you're on, you may be on mute. John, I'm not sure if you're in contact with Dan, but we're not able to hear him at this point.
Yeah, I he was on a little bit ago. I don't think something came up. So I can fill in for Dan, commissioners. It would have been nice to have Dan because he really kind of helps coordinate our mutual aid response. Obviously, you know, on Labor Day, you know, the fires took off regionally. Certainly the ones in Douglas County and up north were pretty devastating. After an initial assessment around Tuesday, we were in contact, and Dan was with the mutual aid group that coordinates, and Douglas PUD had requested mutual aid assistance from us. So we agreed to it. We sent two crews plus a general foreman to help coordinate and work with Douglas on their restoration efforts. That crew was in the field for, I think, a good solid 5 days. You know, in these types of situations, they work a lot of hours doing initial restoration, and then they pretty much go to an 18 hours on, 6 hours off rest period. So the first two crews were set up. I believe they were there through the weekend, and then after that, we swapped them out with two more crews, and they went up. And I believe they were released this weekend as Douglas County was able to get the bulk of their customers back in service. I think you might have seen that I think there was up to like 300 poles that they had repairs, so they needed a lot of help. And not only did we supply crews, but we also supplied material to help support them as well. So appreciate the crews stepping up. Got a lot of good comments that you know, the work was rigorous, but they were out there and they got the job done. And, happy to do our part to help Douglas, and as they've helped us in the past as well. Dan, I don't know if you were able to get back on. If there's anything you wanted to add? With that, I'll stop and see if there's any questions from the commissioners.
John, this is Steve McKenna. I don't have any questions, just a comment. Now that I'm working part-time over in Douglas County, I just wanted to share over and over and over how many people shared their appreciation with me and comments made about the quality of work and the exceptional help that they got from Chelan PUD and others as well. But I just wanted to pass that on.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'll be sure to pass that on to Dan and the crews as well.
John, this is Ann Congdon. Yeah, I'd just like to comment, too, that this just speaks so well to what, you know, what public power is about. You know, people getting together and helping each other meet basic survival needs, and you know, all of us having a shared understanding of what those needs are and what we have to do to, you know, to work together. So I applaud our PD and others for this mutual need understanding we're participating in.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's definitely one of the big benefits, and we all appreciate helping each other out, and certainly we'll do it again in the future, and we'll rely on it as well.
John, this is Gary. I just wanted to share with you that at last week's WPUDA meetings, Douglas mentioned several times the mutual aid that they were getting, and specifically called Chelan County out as being very helpful. So I want you to know that all the PUDs that were in attendance at last week's meeting were informed of how far above and beyond Chelan PUD went and the crews and how hard they worked. And really good job. Got a lot of mileage out of that.
Thanks for the comment.
Well, and as we all know, just sometime we're going to need their help, and it's always good to be involved in that relationship.
Definitely. Dan did get a hold of me. He said he's just having technical difficulties, so next time, hopefully we'll have Dan on the line, but he was able to listen in and heard all the comments as well.
But as the last commissioner, not wanting to be left out, because this, what Commissioner Congdon said really speaks for my thoughts. This is what public power is all about, and we can be proud of what we did, and our other fellow PUDs also. So my thanks in addition to the other four.
Well, thank you, commissioners, and I'll just say thanks to you for making sure we've got a very well-trained and equipped workforce to be able to do that and have the again, flexibility to help out both now and in the future.
John, this is Ann Congdon. One more comment. I just want to say thank you to John for stepping in, as he always does. Doesn't matter what it is, if somebody needs to step in and you know, cover whatever's happening, John does. And I've seen John at the PUD, and he has this careworn look on his face because this has been a really tough time for everybody. And I know John takes all this so seriously. So I just want to say thank you. I really appreciate you and John and what you do for all of us.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. It's my pleasure.
Michelle, I'll take a moment just to do a quick reminder that, you know, normally we do have three transmission lines that serve Chelan. We are down to one at the moment with the Vista line being down and likely not coming back until mid-November, and the Douglas line being down for maintenance. And there are some good positive conversations going on with Douglas about how to handle the Douglas line. You know, we understood clearly that the highest priority was going to be restoring people who were out of service, and so that has been Douglas's priority. We've been supportive of that. As they approach getting everyone back into service, we'll be having some more conversations with them about what's the best way to manage the maintenance that does need to occur on that Douglas line, and the challenges with respect to making sure we've got reliable service to the Chelan area. With that, I would like to return to the regular agenda. This is a little bit challenging because we do this without people in the room, so we're not exactly sure who's on the line all the time. So if you'll bear with me for a moment, I'm just going to ask that I would like to go to agenda item 11, and is Mitch Clark on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Great, and Brett's going to be supporting him as well. So this is a resolution ratifying field work order number 1, authorizing final acceptance of work performed under bid number 17-76 with K&N Electric Incorporated of Spokane Valley, Washington, and authorizing payment of retainage. Mitch and Brett, I turn it over to you. I believe Mitch is going to start. Nope, Brett's going to start. I'm sorry. Thank you, Brett.
Again, good morning, commissioners. This is Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management. I wanted to provide a little history on this since it was before Mitch's time taking over the project. Related to this closeout resolution is we utilized Voith Hydro to analyze, like I mentioned before, extensively units C8 to C11. We did that holistic evaluation, and we identified that the wicket gates didn't have the desired remaining life that we wanted. We wanted the whole unit to match its remaining life once we fix the identified turbine problems. And so they did an analysis that identified that if we'd made some modifications to the wicket gates, that we could have the whole unit last about another 30 years. And in doing so, Voith provided a proposal to us to do the work. We evaluated that. We did identify that there are a number of other vendors that could do that work. And so kind of on related to what Commissioner Bowles was asking is we did decide to go ahead and publicly bid refurbishment of the wicket gates. And so we did that on Unit C8. We publicly bid. It was awarded to K&N, and they did that work. And we closed that contract. And then for the Unit C9, we also bid that work, and K&N was the low for that. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mitch.
Yeah, so the memo that I have here is recommending acceptance of bid 1776 performed by K&N. As Brett said, the project was for modification and refurbishment of all 20 wicket gates for Unit C9. And the modifications were completed in order to improve the fatigue life of those wicket gates. He didn't mention this, but there were two bids received for this work, one of which was K&N's and the other had exceptions and clarifications to the district's commercial terms and was rejected. So therefore, the contract was then awarded to the lowest responsive bidder, which was K&N Electric. One field work order change order was issued during the execution of this contract, and that field work order was assessing liquidated damages totaling $98,285.10 due to delivery delays. Unfortunately, there were significant delays with this project, and substantial completion was reached 167 days after the contract completion milestone. The contract did limit liquidated damages to not exceed 10% of the contract price. So the maximum liquidated damage was assessed via that field work order. So we did have some lessons learned from this contract, especially since we did see significant delays with the successful completion of these wicket gates. So the first was that several discrepancies were found between the shop's final dimensional data and the receiving inspections that were performed on site by district crews. So to mitigate that in the future, we're recommending that the final dimensional inspections are witnessed or are performed independently prior to granting shipping approval. Just so we have a higher level of confidence that the dimensional inspection numbers are accurate and within our contract tolerances. Secondly, we're recommending that the district should include additional bidders data requests with future contracts for this work to more adequately assess all the bidders' capability and experience in performing work similar in scope and magnitude. For this particular bid, K&N really didn't have experience with gates of the size of the large units here. They have had experience doing wicket gate refurbishment type work, but just not with the magnitude of the gates from the large units here. And in addition to that, their equipment really wasn't set up to optimally perform the machining of gates of this size. The gates having a relatively flat leaf between two stems, there's significant differences in its flexibility as it rotates. So as you put it on a lathe and start to turn it, it may flex in one direction and not be able to flex in the other direction. And that causes a lot of movement where you're conducting the machining, and the machinist really needs to pay attention to that movement and compensate for that in order to machine the stems with
with good circularity and holding all of our machine tolerances. So for future, we would require that the bidders have experience with wicket gates of our dimension, and also have equipment in their shops that is better capable of handling an odd-shaped piece of equipment of this size. Particularly for future work, we're planning on the contractor using a laying the wicket gates on a table and having the cutting done around the stems so that the wicket gate itself isn't rotating and seeing that the flexing that we did see on these wicket gates. Lastly, the district is recommending that we add some additional dimensional requirements to the contract to help ensure that all critical dimensions are measured and recorded to ensure that the wicket gates are going to perform well once installed. These drawings are being updated now for the C10, C11 work with these additional dimensional requirements. One of the requirements will be to check the total concentricity of both the upper and lower stems. The existing contract, we checked concentricity of each stem individually, but we need to ensure that those two stems are well aligned so that they'll operate correctly once installed. And then the final change we wanted to make was tightening up some of the tolerances on the machined surfaces just to ensure that the assembled outer diameters of the stems fall within the desired clearance tolerance of the bushings that they're installed into. Is there any questions about any of that?
Commissioners, any questions?
Okay, thank you, commissioners. I'd just say that, you know, normally a closeout of a contract is on the consent agenda. We did pull this one to the regular agenda because of the challenges that we had with this contract and to make sure that adequate transparency for you and for the public at large. With that, we're going to move to agenda item 12. This is a resolution authorizing the general manager enter into a service agreement, number 20-25, with Blue Leaf Environmental Incorporated of Ellensburg, Washington, for the Rock Island HCP Confirmation Survival Study. Lance Keller, are you on the line?
I am, Steve.
Go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Steve, and good morning, commissioners. This is a topic that has been before the commissioners in two of our last quarterly natural resource updates. We first brought this to the board on April 27th, and lastly on August 3rd. We reported on August 3rd that we had successfully flown a request for proposal, and through that process, we received four complete offer or bids on the four proposals. Our project evaluation team internally completed their reviews, and on August 7th, we notified Blue Leaf Environmental that we had an intent to award them the contract, and we began negotiating the contract and the services. We ultimately negotiated a not-to-exceed amount of $954,891 for the 2021 Rock Island HCP Confirmation Survival Study. First off, Blue Leaf Environmental, as an entity, has a very positive standing working relationship with the district. They were also awarded, through a request for proposal process, monitoring evaluation sturgeon work associated with the Rock Reach White Sturgeon Management Plan. And they have been carrying that out for the district, from 2012 to current. And through that effort, we've really, seen Blue Leaf exhibit some abilities that we feel will be essential to the successful 2021 survival study at Rock Island Dam, the first being that they've shown that they have an exceptional knowledge of both passive and active fish tagging technologies, which is the cornerstone of this effort, conducting an active tag survival study at Rock Island in 2021. Secondly, they have illustrated that they also have a superior database infrastructure and the analytical capabilities to effectively manage long-term data sets that can be quite complex. We will see millions of detections of these study fish, so we need someone that's skilled with a large data set such as that. They also have a well-defined and highly capable team of technicians and biologists that will be responsible for collecting the data and analyzing and reporting the results. And then lastly, but also just as important as the first bullet item, Bluth Environmental has completed all the work to the satisfaction of the district and has completed that on time as well as being under budget. So all this, as well as the products that they propose, we felt that the selection of Blue Leaf was the right selection for the 2021 survival study. The agreement has four main tasks that we look to Blue Leaf to perform in 2021. First off, we will look to Blue Leaf to assist in the district in drafting a study design for the 2021 survival study. We will also look to Blue Leaf to be responsible for the deployment and retrieval of all detection equipment in the reservoir, forebay, and downstream area of Rock Island Dam. Blue Leaf will also be responsible for the procurement and activation of active tags, as well as the tagging and surgical insertion of those tags into study fish. And then lastly, Blue Leaf will collect all the data, process it, finish it off, and write a report, summarizing their findings. The district responsibilities to support Blue Leaf in executing these activities will be assist them in the installation of detection equipment on the physical structure of Rock Island Dam with the dive team and mechanic crews. We have those hours already built into the 2021 dynamic work plan. We will provide Blue Leaf Environmental use of our fully operational tag sites, which are already in place in the tail race area of Rocky Reach Dam, as well as the tail race of Rock Island Dam. And then we will also utilize Fish and Wildlife employees for the collection of study fish from the Rocky Reach Juvenile Sampling Facility associated with the Juvenile Fish Bypass System at Rocky Reach. And then we will also look to our staff to transport those fish and release them once they are tagged at their designated release location and time. We will begin the 2021 survival study by releasing study fish in April of 2021, and we should have preliminary results by September of 2021. And at this point, I would entertain any questions that the commissioners might have.
Okay, thank you, Lance. I will just reiterate, this is a very important study for us. Obviously, the commitment of the Habitat Conservation Plan is not just that we do the things that we said we would do, but that we would produce the results that were anticipated from the study, and this is our way of testing that. We only do this once every 10 years, so this is an important moment for us. I was really pleased to see the quality of the people who are participating on Blue Leaf side. I would have to say what I consider to be the premier salmon scientist in the Columbia River Basin is part of the team. So this is a very strong team representing the fact that this is important work that needs to be done. Thank you, Lance. We will now move to agenda item 13. This is a resolution declaring Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories Incorporated of Pullman, Washington as the sole source supplier of protection and automation equipment for use at the district's hydroelectric facilities and transmission and distribution systems. Steve Wickel will be presenting.
Yeah, good morning, commissioners. Steve, senior team. Steve Wickel here, transmission engineering manager. I'm here to present the resolution to declare Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories as a continued sole source supplier of protection and automation equipment for use at the district's hydroelectric facilities and transmission and distribution systems, as Steve Wright said. It was on June 13, 2011, by resolution that the district declared Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories as the brand name provider for the supply of protective relays and accessories, and at that time, it was McLaren Incorporated as the sole source provider of those relays. On September 22, 2011, the district and Schweitzer entered into contract number 11-37 for the supply of protective relays and accessories, and that contract was completed in September of 2016. On November 7th of 2016, by resolution, the district declared Schweitzer through their new distributor, Peak Measure, as a continuing sole source provider for the supply of protective relays and accessories. Contract 16-76 currently governs Schweitzer's furnishings to the district of protective relays and accessories. That contract is valid until February 10th of 2021, with an option to extend for another 12 months. I'll explain shortly the reason for wanting to renegotiate that contract at this time. So for the past 9 years, the district has installed Schweitzer protective relays and has expanded the use of Schweitzer products to include automation controllers, which collect and distribute critical power system information to our hydro operator and system operator control centers, as well as distribution controllers that are part of the district's digital transformation initiative that will modernize the operation of the district's distribution system. Additionally, with revisions to the North American Electric Reliability Corporation Critical Infrastructure Protection Standards, i.e. the NERC SIP standards, we are installing gateway servers and Ethernet security gateway devices that allow for secure communication to Schweitzer devices. Standardizing this equipment helps mitigate cybersecurity risks to the district's assets and also reduces the burden of district's engineering and procurement groups with purchasing equipment and maintaining compliance with the NERC SIP 13 standard, which becomes effective this October 1st. So the real driving factor for renegotiating the Schweitzer contract at this time is because of the new SIP 13 standard and our desire to negotiate the additional terms and conditions with Schweitzer that support that new standard. For these reasons, district staff has determined it is in the best interest of the district that protection and automation equipment, as described in the resolution, continue to be procured from Schweitzer and to continue to designate Schweitzer through its sole source sales representative Peak Measure to be the sole source supplier for the equipment in an amount not to exceed $700,000. I would like to point out that this contract does not guarantee purchases to Schweitzer, and furthermore, the not to exceed amount under the previous contract has only been 25% committed, and this new contract does not exceed the value originally approved. District staff had negotiated a new two-year contract with Schweitzer with possible extension for 3 additional years, which adds the protection and automation equipment for district's assets and includes the new terms related to the SIP 13 standard. District staff intend to close out contract 16-76 after the new contract is in effect. And with that, I'll take any questions.
So, Steve, I've got a question. You said something that I just didn't catch, and I wanted to make sure I fully understand. You were talking about something was not guaranteed about the price.
It's not the price. It's just that we're not guaranteeing any purchases. There's not a guarantee that we have to purchase anything from Schweitzer. So we're not entering into a $700,000 agreement that we have to purchase anything. It's just the option to purchase.
Great. Thank you.
Yes.
Commissioners, any other questions?
Hearing no questions, I'd like to suggest the following. From talking to Eric, my belief is that the consent agenda was approved based on the motion made earlier today. So, and the item 14 was approved based on an earlier motion as well. So that leaves us with items 11, 12, and 13 that would be up for the board to consider for approval.
Commissioners, what are your wishes with items number 11, 12, and 13 on the regular agenda for resolution?
Mr. President, I move to accept resolutions 11, 12, and 13 as presented.
Thank you, Commissioner Bowles. Do we have a second?
Second by Ann.
Thank you, Commissioner Congdon. Do we have any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approving the resolutions 11, 12, and 13, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, please say nay. And the ayes have it. The resolutions pass.
Okay. I have a couple other items, and there is a chance, just to put you on notice here, that we may get through the entire agenda this morning with the possible exception of the executive session, and so you might want to give some thought as to, we have a short executive session, probably 10 minutes, as to whether you might want to go into the lunch hour to accomplish that. Two manager items I would like to add. First, we have made arrangements for a visit in Peshaston. Commissioner Smith and McKenna will be joining us. We had a request from former Commissioner Berggren to visit a site that he's got for residential development. We did make a determination that that this visit is not just because he's a former commissioner. It's an invitation we would have accepted if it was just a member of the general public to just take a look at the site, and there are water and wastewater implications from the size of the development there. While we are there, we also think it would be useful to visit with a couple of the fruit storage facilities out there. We have seen some fairly high discharges from those units, and created some issues with respect to what the capacity is of the relatively new wastewater facility. And so we thought, and we know there are conversations going on with those folks now, and they are being responsive in terms of working with us on that. We thought it would be good while we're there just to have a conversation about that as well, because, again, this is an overall question with respect to both water and wastewater use in the Peshaston area, so it gives us a chance to see kind of the whole picture that will be going on. And the intention would be to provide a report to the rest of the board later. We kept it to two just so that it would not be an official board meeting. I thought I would also mention quickly that we have filed comments in the California Independent System Operator review that's going on around governance. This is our second round of comments that we have filed. The first round of comments was what do people think about how governance should be structured? Recall that we've had concerns for quite some time that the CAISO governance is structured in a fashion where membership on the board is determined by the California governor, with confirmation by the California Senate, and that they represent a constituency that is not west-wide, and that the market that CAISO is operating is a west-wide market, and they want to continue to grow that market. Our latest round of comments responds to a proposal that was put out by a task force put together by CAISO, a specific governance proposal. We felt that there were some really good steps made towards addressing our concerns, but that while we were supportive generally of the path that they were going on, there were significant caveats that needed to be addressed in order to assure that if there was an emergency situation, that the California politicians that are in charge of this organization would not have a mechanism that would allow them to do something that just benefits California constituents without at least a review process. So, we continue to be very actively engaged. Tuli Hakala, Rob Davis have been doing some really good work on this and have put us in a position to make comments that I think are being heard in that process. That's it for manager items. Any questions about those?
Thank you for that, Steve. Commissioners, any questions? Next on the agenda is commission items. Commissioners, do we have any news to share?
So, Gary, I've got one item. I wanted to get to it before Dennis did.
Okay.
I was absolutely thrilled last week during our P&D Association meetings at our social hour for past presidents to see Barbara Tilley on the meeting with us. And it reminded me so much of the fact of the leadership that the
that we have helped provide our association for a very, very long time period. Recognizing, I believe that Jim Wall was a past president, as is Barbara Tilley, as is Dennis Bowles, as am I, and in a few years, as will be Gary Arsenault. And it's been, you know, it was just a neat event. Even in spite of the fact that Barbara had to call out the fact that her mother was my kindergarten teacher and her dad was my barber when I was a kid. So it was a lot of fun, but I just thought people in the organization might like to be aware of the impact Chelan has provided for our state association.
Well said, Randy.
Well said, indeed.
Yeah, I think that Barbara's mother was much more successful with you in kindergarten than her father was for your, as you as barber.
Commissioners, any other good for the order?
Just a personal thing to Randy Smith from a new neighbor, James Hansen. Jay Hansen, who passes along greetings and hello.
Ah, cool.
So they just moved into our neighborhood and are very welcome. And he mentioned that you guys had played a lot of golf together.
Yep, I wondered where Jay has moved back to.
Yeah. Yep, just did, about 3 weeks ago.
Well, commissioners, the next item up is follow-up on delegation items. Steve?
We just had one. There was a request that we share the Stehekin Virtual Open House website with commissioners. That was completed on September 9th. Hopefully you've seen that and don't have any others.
Thank you. How about delegation of action items from today?
We did not hear any. Did we miss anything?
I don't recall. Commissioners, any items for Steve? Okay, hearing none. I'm looking at my clock. It's 11:59. Commissioners, what are your wishes? I'm going to call for public comment here in a moment, but I just wanted to know if you would be willing to stay on the line and work our way through executive session, or whether you would like to reconvene after 1 o'clock.
Hey, Gary, this is Ann.
Yes, Ann.
That people around here, especially tourists that haven't lived here their whole life, have regarding the lake. And so it should be fun. It should be interesting. And I just wanted to let everybody out there know that we're doing this at 8:30 a.m.
The Steve McKenna. I am in favor of continuing on to finish up the executive session, but I would just like to point out that the Stehekin Open House portal or link to the website that was designed by staff, I just thought was an excellent tool during a very challenging period of time to get information out to folks and get feedback. I just thought it was an exemplary tool that I'm going to think about using in the future with school districts. But I just thought our staff stepped up to the plate and did a fantastic job. It's a great tool during some challenging times. So for whatever that's worth, I just wanted to pass that on.
Thank you, Steve. I also, Ann, you have something to share really quickly with fellow commissioners as well, and that is that this Wednesday I will be participating in a forum that is being held in Bellingham The topic of the forum is, can climate-friendly utilities serve social justice? And this was also arranged by Rachel Hansen. And it is going to be a rather interesting forum. It will have lots of participants on the panel. Atul from Whatcom PUD will also be one of the participants. So I will be able to report back at our next board meeting how that went. And additionally, on Friday, I will be participating in a virtual community leadership program through the Wenatchee Valley Chamber, and that will be to discuss with young people the role of a PUD commissioner and what the responsibilities are. I will also report back at the next board meeting on that topic as well. Having said all of that, if I can get a general consensus whether commissioners would care to wait and do our executive session now or postpone it to the 1 o'clock hour.
I'd say do it now.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say do it now. I believe we need to call back in on the executive number, though.
Yes, that would be correct. So, Steve, what I'm going to do is call for public comment really quickly. Any members of the public are encouraged to make comment and ask questions. We'll open the phones lines up now. If you do wish to speak, please state your name and address for the record. And if you'd be kind enough, please limit your comments to 3 minutes. So, Rebecca, if you could open those final lines up. Hearing no comment, what we will do is move to executive session. Yes, we will need to call back in on the executive session phone line. And, Steve, you think 10 or 15 minutes for executive session?
We'll say 15, but I'm pretty confident it'll be less.
Okay, very good. So we will adjourn for now, and commissioners, please call back in on the executive session.
So we do need to read the...
thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate that. We are going into executive session to discuss legal counsel agency enforcement action, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCW. So we will adjourn for now and call back in on the executive session line. We're coming out of executive session. It is September 21, 2020. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we shall stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody.